I moved to Burnaby in 1919 after taking part in the Great Winnipeg Strike. I had been a member of the Winnipeg Trades and Labor Council as a delegate of the Retail and Mail Order Union Clerks. There was a great turmoil across Canada about this time, and had been for several years, before the war and after the war and during the war. The cost of living had gone up so fast that people could not make enough money to live on. Wages for girls in offices were about $2.50 a week. Store clerks worked for about $6. Men worked for 10 cents an hour, and the most was 15 cents. Skilled mechanics worked for 25 cents an hour. And soon they were determined they were going to fight to get better conditions. In the woods and the forests, owners of logging camps and mills had made huge fortunes out of the forest products of British lumber, and the workers were last going to make a last-ditch stand. And many of the settlers in Burnaby were there in the first line of fighting. Jack Burrows, who lived latterly at 4134 Parker Street, packed his blankets, went up the coast organizing. Bill Pritchard, who became the Reeve of Burnaby, he came up from Winnipeg after the strike and ran into a lot of trouble. In 1930s, the municipality went broke. The land clearing and road making that went into the work of laying the foundation in Vancouver and its environment took the lives and strength of thousands of men and women. The heartbreaking job of women folk deserves a monument. They had a job of feeding men and milking family cow, hunting through thick bush for it, many times with its tie rope tangled around a stump, miles from home. Then their husband went away for work miles from home. They had waited for them month after month to come home from a fishing camp or a logging camp. For the rest, they knitted socks, sweaters, and mitts, making jam, butter, bacon, and 101 other things. But the everlasting poverty in a land of plenty. The great food markets of today, which dispense almost anything, made in great factories run with organized labor, have taken the slavery out of home of 50 years ago. Men and women of all nationalities came and went in Burnaby. Chinese, Hindus, Japanese, Italians, English, French, Germans, Swedes, Norwegians, and Irish, Americans, men from Australia, New Zealand, Russians, people from Poland. I've known and spoke to all these nationalities, both men and women in Burnaby. They came and they went away, some stayed, but all contributed work, time, and money. They got no medals, citations, or monuments. The generation of today reap the benefits of their work. Let us hope they in turn will build a greater and beautiful Burnaby. Its wild beauty is fast going. A culture building must take its place. People's parks, outdoor theaters, great music halls, and places for rest and recreation and culture. For many years, Burnaby has been a municipality composed of two small towns, Edmonds and Vancouver Heights, and a number of villages centered around a post office, such as Burnaby Lake, Douglas Road, McKay, Royal Oak, etc., etc., and at least six more. Each of these places were in various ways of development. In some, most of the residents were white-collar workers, and their jobs were in Vancouver or Westminster. In others were sawmill or cannery, some purely residential, like Burnaby Lake Post Office District, and others devoted to small berry farms and chicken farms. All had local troubles. No plan of settlement had ever been made in Burnaby. People just bought a piece of property where it was for sale, with or without services, often without light, water, sewers, and roads, or schools. Here was a municipality that of all others in BC should have been laid out to a plan years ago. It is the key district of all the lower mainland, as all the main highways, power lines, sewers, conduits, telephone lines, east and south, transcontinental railways, and bus lines, and also 12 miles of coastline for ocean steamships, and little or nothing was done about it. It just grew. And today, Burnaby has been taken over by 17 large American corporations who have built oil refineries alongside a residential district, a tank farm in a place where a great park should have been, other factories where market gardens should have been placed. Most of the early settlers were gardeners or were compelled to become one out of necessity. Most of them had a raspberry patch and a strawberry patch, a small vegetable garden. The women enjoyed the work of picking and canning the products of their gardens. There was always a rush for work for the men in the summertime. In fact, Burnaby was like a huge parking lot for workers who commuted to and from Vancouver or New Westminster. From 1918 to 1929, everything seemed to be going along smoothly. But the only excitement that took place was a rousing meeting at the local ratepayers' meeting, putting the local ward councillor on a hot grill. for a new road or a water line or a lot of excitement over a new street light, for which they would have to pay $30 a year for each one forever. When they did have one, it looked like an oversized firefly that had come out of the bush, and many of them become interesting targets for small boys with slingshots. There was also a terrific boom all over American continent. Everyone that had a few hundred dollars began to play the stock market. And on one weekend in 1929, in the early fall, the boom broke. In a few days, municipal road work came to a stop. For instance, on Gilmer Avenue, North Burnaby, the form work for a new concrete sidewalk between Union Street and Venables had been placed on Friday night, and the concrete to be run on the following Monday. But it never got there. This is in August 1955, and again I repeat, in 1963, 1966, and 1971, and it's still waiting for the concrete. Municipal workers were laid off work. Most of them never had a chance to start again. The next summer there was not so much money to pay taxes with, and more curtailment at the municipal hall. Municipal police, school teachers, and other municipal workers in key positions went without salaries for a very long time, but kept on working. In a short time, the municipal council, with Reeve, Bill Pritchard, and the council instituted work relief for all unemployed Burnaby workers, consisting of clearing of lanes of stumps and brush and opening up road ends in various parts of the municipality. There was no rejoicing over this. It was the toughest work that could be found. As the order had gone out from Victoria that no machinery or blasting powder was to be used, huge stumps had to be dug out with spades and a fire put around them and burned them up, and parts of them to be axed off or to keep the fire going. There were all kinds of disputes with foremen. A sensible foreman with patience could hold a gang together and accomplish a good deal of work, but one of them took to bullying the workers in one gang in North Burnaby, and the gang grabbed him at quitting time one night and stuffed him in the toolbox amongst the crosscuts, axes, saws, and spades. He remained there for some hours. Anyway, he learned a lesson. Some of these workers were beginning to think. So were some other people. The bondholders of Burnaby Municipal Bond started proceedings against the Reeve and the municipal injurer for misappropriation of municipal funds. This money had been used for relief projects. There was no other source at the time to relieve the distress of residents of Burnaby. Urgent calls for relief were made daily. Many people sold all their personal possessions and cashed in insurance policies before asking for food tickets from the relief department. Near riots occurred, and on one occasion, 600 men and women marched from Gilmore and Hastings Street to a hall near Edmonds to meet the Reeve and Council to demand relief for children, whose relief allowance was $2.50 a month. For a child of 1 year to 21 years, the consequence was that all the children and youth came to near starvation. One organization of which I was a member secured various pieces of uncultivated land from 2 to 5 acres. 1 2-acre lot was on Willingdon Avenue just below Royal Oak. Another was on the shore of Burnaby Lake, about 5 acres. Another garden site was adjoining the old folks home on Boundary Road. On a request of the James Seed Company of Victoria for seed, they generously supplied all the seed we needed for over 100, and we grew over 100 tons of vegetables from these gardens. This organization that stood behind the work was called the Army of the Common Good. It lasted 10 years. During that time, the members organized the credit union movement in British Columbia. They also drew up the Credit Union Act through the Vancouver Cooperative Council. They also started co-op stores and the Co-op Wholesale Society. The first credit union in BC was started in Burnaby by a group of unemployed workers. The Co-op Good Cooperative Association also started 5 stores. These all closed down about the time the Second War started, and members supported the organizations. For a few months longer, it could have become the beginning of a province-wide co-op store organization. But so many members had worked in it for so many years without pay, and it seemed hopeless to carry on with it. Some of the staff went to work with the Fisherman's Co-op. One went to the Co-op Wholesale. Others carried on work with the credit union movement. Others went to work in war factories. The following is a list of some of the men and women connected with this organization. Mr. D.G. McDonald, Mr. Brown, Mr. Apple, Alfred Bingham, McDonald, the tailor, Mr. Wilson, the former Hudson Bay Company manager, Peter Guthrie, Ted Moe, John Patterson, Mr. Crawshaw, Miss Penfold, Dr. Ray, United Church, Reverend McKay, United Church, Reverend Sibley, United Church, Mr. Lowe of Douglas Road Store, and Mr. and Mrs. Caldwell.